Auckland Grey Power is pleased to sponsor this edition of Senior Focus. And welcome again to Senior Focus. And this afternoon I have in the studio with me two wonderful women. I'm Anne-Marie Currie, I'm the presenter, and Grey Power is the sponsor. And the topic today is the living wage movement. So the two beautiful women are Annie Newman and Diana Jukic.
Hi, Anne-Marie.
Hi, Anne-Marie.
Great to have you with us. And the topic today is about the way in which the living wage movement is wanting to see change and improvements in New Zealand in the pay rates, particularly related to change in the aged care sector, but also across the board, so it does something to change communities, families and children who are struggling at the bottom end. Now, it's important also to recognise and understand how Grey Power has become involved in this, and who these women are and what their roles are. So first of all, Annie, can you tell us about your role in the Living Wage Movement?
Yes, my role is as National Convener of the Living Wage Movement, and that means that I convene the three streams of the Living Wage Movement. We're made up of faith-based religious groups, community organisations like Grey Power, and also union organisations, and they come together as a single voice across civil society to try and reduce poverty and inequality through the mechanism of the living wage, which is one way that we know we can create a better society.
Thank you. And Diana, you're a businesswoman and a volunteer. Can you give me an answer as to just how you got involved in the living wage?
I got involved in the living wage movement because I was volunteering at a local food bank. And after watching the number of people, especially working people, queue for food parcels, I decided I wanted to be at the other end of the cliff and do something that actually assisted people to get paid enough so they weren't surviving on charity.
Mm-hmm. So what's on top right now for Grey Power? I'll just tune into our organisation for a moment. And this is annual plan submission writing time. This is the time when everyone has a chance to have a say on rates and charges and whether they want to see, for example, the business rate continuing to reduce, placing heavy emphasis on the residents, whether they want to see the annual general charge raised or not, whether they think it's an effective tool as it is, or whether they think it needs to be adjusted, and what are the priorities being set by the local boards in spending, and what are the council's wage priorities? Those on the 100,000 a year compared with the number of council staff and temporary and casual pay rates that are below the living wage. So these are some of the things that people can submit on and will submit on, and we will be doing ours, but on behalf of the organisation, but we encourage members to do their own as well, because we have members across six local board areas. Now, in March, we have the ADCOS Forum on the Age-Friendly City on the 17th of March at Western Springs. If you want to register for that, go to www.adcos.org.nz. That's the website at which you'll find out more detail. That's going to be an all-day event, and I sincerely encourage anyone with an interest in the Age-Friendly City to come along to that, www.adcos.org.nz, and you'll learn how to register. We at Grey Power are joining in the Jazz in the Domain at the Band Rotunda between 1 and 4 on the 20th of March. And in the following week, we're planning to have our March meeting, which will be more information given in future programs. So let's enjoy a favourite track of mine, Summertime. It's George Gershwin, played by Miles Davis.
Thank you.
And a warm welcome to listeners who've just joined us. We're talking about the living wage movement, and I have in the studio Annie Newman and Diana Jukic with me. And before we go into detail again, I just wanted to say that my experience began in this aged care sector when I tried to find suitable care for my mother, and that led me to actually join Grey Power as I became aware of the need for greater advocacy for our older folk. So at the national level, Grey Power Federation is a member of Care and Counts, a group that's advocating to Parliament to change aspects of aged care where there are unacceptable risks to our elderly folk. And the work of Care and Counts, it's an ongoing advocacy, and it's been very powerful indeed. But there are two major goals that they have, and one is to get an aged care commissioner to take cases involving elder abuse through the courts, and an equally important goal is to raise safety and well-being for our older adults in care by raising pay rates of the caregivers. So Care and Counts has challenged the low pay rates of aged care in society, and that's also because it's a challenge to the government, who pay a proportion of the costs. I'm really interested to hear from Annie about the living wage at this point, how the new rate has come about and what it is and how it's calculated.
Okay, well, the living wage rate's calculated by the Family Centre Social Policy Research Unit based in Wellington. So we make sure that there are independent social scientists that are determining what the living wage rate is. The first announcement was in 2013, and that was based around the basic expenditure items for an average family. And it's modelled on a household of 1.5 adults and 2 children. And that's because that's around about the average. The amount that they determine is then raised each year by the average wage movement. And after 5 years, the methodology is reassessed, and we look at whether or not those expenditure items are still relevant. So it's based on a household, because people live in households. Mm. But it's it applies, they then take it back to an individual, because individuals get paid in the market. So this is seen as a wage in the market. I think at $19.80, which is the rate that was just released this week, we know that that's a very conservative amount of money for anybody to live on. And what the researchers know is that whether you're a single person or you're living in a household with 1.5 earners, $19.80 is just enough to have a decent life. So it's designed to be the amount that you need to survive and participate in society. So more than just instant noodles on the table, it actually should provide you with some of the things that we consider people in a Western society should be able to do, which is have time with the family, to be able to pay for a little bit of insurance, to be able to take some time off from time to time. So that's the sort of basis for the living wage. And we provide that whole calculation on our website for anybody who's interested in exploring it further.
Mm. And what is your website?
Our website is www.livingwage.org.nz. And we have a wonderful Facebook as well, which is Living Wage Aotearoa New Zealand. And so those two sources can give you lots of information. And if you want to sign up as a supporter, you'll get an e-newsletter that comes out every month.
Well, thank you for that, Annie. And I'm really keen to take up a point that you made earlier, that when Care and Counts were looking at the living wage, the members of Care and Counts and the various groups that feed into Care and Counts were actually asked what they thought the living wage should be. And what was that response?
Yeah, well, that report talked to all the stakeholders in the industry, whether or not they were the employers or the funders or the workers or the unions representing them. And they all came up with a very similar figure of $18 to $20 an hour. Now, that was in 2013, so we're looking at a considerably higher amount now. We've got a minimum wage of $15.25, and 30% above that is the living wage. So really you're talking about all the stakeholders knowing that those workers are undervalued and knowing that they are worth somewhere around $20 an hour, which most of us would think would be a fair enough amount of money. Mm. Of course, if they got equal pay, it would be quite a lot higher than that, because their skills and responsibilities are worth a lot more than $20 an hour.
Mm, indeed. And we shall talk about that a little bit further in depth. Just as this is the week in which the minimum wage rose to $15.25, I'm interested in making a comment here that the equivalent amount in Australia translated into New Zealand dollars would be $18.51, and they don't have GST on food to cope with. So I think that it's quite significant that our minimum wage is probably lower than it should be, and we have so many people who are just above that minimum wage who would be captured by the minimum wage rise perhaps, but who will be so inadequately paid on a continuing basis. Diana, you've led campaigns and you've tackled public meetings and roused many people to write letters in support of encouraging change of the aged care sector in respect of these pay rates. And you manage an art business and have ongoing commitments to family and community. So what's led you in your busy life to be so committed to volunteer to make a difference through raising pay rates in aged care?
Well, thanks, Anne-Marie. As I said earlier, I got involved in the living wage initially because I felt that I wanted to participate in something that made a difference. Aged care I have a particular passion for, because we have family members who require the support of aged care. And I've watched the workers who work with our family members. It's very nuanced care. They have to do a variety of different they have to have a variety of different skills. It's not unskilled work, but the pay is woefully inadequate. And I'd like the people that are caring for our family members to be able to care for theirs, to provide enough food for them. I also don't want them to be stressed, and that their job of caring for elderly people in our society leaves them unable to care for their own family seems to me an enormous injustice. And I'd like something to be done about that.
Mm, indeed. And when Professor Judy McGregor went undercover in aged care to test out what was expected in an aged care giver role, she was shocked at the demands, and she found the combination of the empathy with the heavy lifting, the focus on detail around medications that had to be given regularly in different dosages. The whole package stressed her to the point where in 3 weeks she lost 5 kilos. But in writing up your experience into a groundbreaking report that's gone international, she has really assisted, I think, the whole campaign around understanding what it means to improve pay rates in aged care. And I wonder if you'd like to comment, Annie, on the Christine Bartlett case that's gone through the courts, because I know that Judy was able to support Christine, but Christine's case is also moving on into the equal pay debacle of, you know, where we haven't got decent pay rates for women. So could you comment on her case and subsequent developments?
Christine is a care worker based in Wellington, and she's a very courageous woman. And through her union, E2, she became the face of an equal pay case. The union, on her behalf, took a case challenging the application of the Equal Pay Act, which has been lying dormant since the 70s. That Equal Pay Act was seen to be relevant to care workers now, and that's what's been so groundbreaking about it. What it says is that you can take a predominantly woman's job, like care work, you can compare it with a predominantly male job, for instance, a corrections officer, and you can work out whether or not they are comparable. And if they are comparable, how are they being compared in terms of the value we place on them, in other words, the money? And one of the things that we know is that if you compare a care worker with a corrections officer, for example, and there'd be many other jobs in the trade sector which are predominantly male, you're looking at probably at least $10 an hour more that workers like Christine are not being paid because they're not being valued properly. So we won that case. And Christine is now the face of a very successful, groundbreaking case in New Zealand. And there are negotiations taking place between all the parties in the sector to see if there can be an outcome that prevents this going through the courts any further. And if it can't be resolved by March this year, that case will go back to court in order for a comparator to determine the amount of money that care worker should get. So this is a case which has far-reaching implications right across the care sector, where some 48,000 to 50,000 workers are currently being undervalued at the moment.
Wow, that's a very sizable figure. I was thinking about a mechanic fixing a car, which is a level 4 skilled qualification, where I believe that it's quite normal for mechanics to charge $60 per hour for a labour charge, often more, often at 75. But surely someone in the caregiving role, working on even levels 2 to 4 in skills terms, surely they could be receiving $26 an hour, because I think our mothers and fathers deserve a value that we would want to give them. I think, Diana, you've made a comment that if you were doing the caregiving that other people are doing for your family members, that you would want to pay yourself more.
Yes, when I think about the care that my family member is getting, she's often confused and frightened. She has caregivers around her that comfort her. We can't be there 24/7, so they're replacing us. And I want the value of that to be realised in monetary terms. They're being me when I can't be there, and it's really important to me that the staff are valued, because in a way, valuing the staff is valuing our family members.
Indeed. When we consider the range of skills that are required in aged care by workers, that could cover off nursing, counselling, physio, lifting, turning, being mother, auntie, you know, confident. The skills are many and varied, and I know we've made this point already in different ways, but it is quite phenomenal when we actually look at how flexible the people have to be, how patient, how sensitive to be able to tune in to exactly what will make a difference in any particular situation. I know with my own mother, her body might have been deteriorating, but her mind was as sharp as a pin, and she could get bored and frustrated if she didn't have sufficient interaction. So it's not just a matter of basic bed changing and lifting and moving skills. It's a lot more than that. So long-term trends in the sector are important, because the numbers in aged care are going to grow. The demands of those in the over 80 age group in particular are going to, they're going to last longer, but they're going to be more vulnerable as they last longer. So the shortage of people suitable to take on this work has become a serious issue. One third of the aged care workers are now over 50. So a recent AUT research report pointed out the unsustainability of the current environment. Where are we going to find the workers that we're going to need in the next 10 to 20 years? Some leaders in aged care have moved their rates up their pay rates. They haven't got them to the living wage, but they've got them closer to the living wage than the minimum wage, which is a move, because they want to capture the highest quality staff available. That way they can know that they've invested more in their sector, and they will attract perhaps a higher fee, or they will have more sustainable workforce to be able to supply for the demand, and they will be able to keep building the buildings, and the whole formula will hopefully work for them. But certainly they have seen an advantage in doing this. How do you see this situation, Annie? Do you think that employers are really aware of the trends?
Look, we've got Living Wage Movement Aotearoa now has 47 accredited New Zealand employers who have signed a licence to pay all their workers who are directly employed plus their contracted workers a living wage. And they always note that that means that they have more loyal, more hardworking, better staff as a result of it. They don't go into it for that reason. They go in because they believe that that's the right thing to do. But what they all note is that what we have to do is we have to convince the government that that is the case, because employers are telling us that it is better if people are paid better. But the government holds the purse strings in the aged care sector, and they need to understand that the value, as Judy McGregor said in Care and Counts, the value of care workers is inextricably linked with the value that we place on the seniors in our society. You cannot separate those two things out, and yet the message is simply that we do not value the people in this sector. So I think that everybody understands exactly what's going on, that the economy is better, businesses are better, our communities are better if people are paid properly. There is more money turning around in our local economies. But we need to convince the government that that's the case, and we need to make sure that the living wage becomes something that everybody's seeing as a basic standard that we have to respect.
Mm, indeed. And I'm sure that all of the people that are working in the sector to get this change would very much support that statement. Now, there's another bigger picture here too, and that's important to Grey Power as our members raise issues about being concerned around the future of their grandchildren, how children generally are faring in society, and real deep concern being expressed about the rising level of poverty, where 25% of Kiwi kids were deemed to be living in poverty according to at least one measure, and now it's 30%. So in the last 18 months, it's risen again. Economists are saying right across the world that growing inequalities in societies are impacting on personal violence levels, on the viability of domestic business to grow, and with low inflation, and there's no reason why we can't raise pay levels. It's not going to drive inflation. Inflation is drifting to zero. So this is a perfect time to really address inequalities by raising pay. So when we look at the CEOs that are receiving millions in bonuses, and the gap between the top 10% of earners and the bottom 20%, that gap is growing. It's rising rapidly, and it becomes impossible for people to get ahead who are trapped in that bottom 20%, surviving maybe meal to meal. Max Rushbrook has published several books analysing the figures. He's a journalist, and it's very interesting how he has put it, that the dream, the Kiwi dream of once being able to pull yourself up by your own bootstraps by working extra shifts and overtime at weekends and that, all of that's really been cut away by zero contracts, by lack of extra pay rates for shifts on the weekend, and a 7-day-a-week economy. And consequently, with low casual rates of pay, people picking up a few hours here and a few hours there, but not enough to sustain, really, a 40-hour week. All of this is putting huge pressure on families and making it very difficult for people to get ahead, and certainly being able to afford loans to go to and paying back loans for students is another aspect of all of this. With the council, what we note is that library assistants are often on casual shifts with no minimum period during each week. We know there are pool attendants that are on low wages who don't get the living wage. We know there are various groups within the council's pay structure who are very much affected by the low pay rates. And we also note that there are very large numbers of staff above $100,000 a year. So we're really encouraging our members to write in about this as part of their submission process. I'm wondering if you've got a comment about the CEOs and pay rates generally and the council situation.
We've just had a report released, completed by Katrina McLennan, and it's on our website again. And that's talking about the incredible difference in the top salaries and the bottom earners at the council. And so what's important is that we get in behind exactly what you say, Anne-Marie, and start writing into the council, be part of that submission process, and calling on them to create the world's most livable city by reducing that income gap, because it's too great. We've got a chief executive that had a $60,000 pay increase a couple of weeks ago, and that would take be enough for two people on a minimum wage. This is a terrible indictment on our public institution. So I would really encourage your members to become part of the Grey Power campaign around getting a council that's really going to support wellbeing in the city.
Thank you, Annie. And I also would like to thank you, Diana. And this is time to say goodbye for now and tune in next week. Thanks. Get together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6. Or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/senior focus, and do note, senior focus is one word.